2010.
Former Army.
What's that? What?
Say, Melissa should be filming Armin.
Oh, jeez.
All I heard was...
I know.
I said filming Armin, and you went...
I thought you said...
Everyone went...
I thought he said salmonella. I said, what?
I will bring it back to her.
She's and she's over here, you know, watching me stick my finger on my nose.
Chips roll in. And I watch them roll away again. Oh, yeah. Sit on the dock of the bay. Watching the clouds roll.
Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua. Three men and a microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages. What's the matter, cupcake? Winter's here and all you have to look forward to is yellow snow. That Einstein you're dating wants to know where the white goes when the snow melts? Thinking of all the fun you'll have schlepping home at 20 miles an hour? Car won't start, mud, slush, salt, traffic accidents, shoveling, brushing, and wading through a snowdrift just to check the mail? Your boots leak and you only have one glove and it's stuck? Frozen wipers, locks, fingers, toes, and noses. Hey, at Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange, we agree. Winter sucks. So let us help you bear the frozen tundra that is upstate New York. The Military Exchange has everything you'll ever need to kick the crap out of old man winter. Warm hats, caps, gloves, socks, long underwear, Polypro, thermal, wiki, and super wiki. Gore-Tex insulates, wool, jackets, parkas, pants, and boots. There's lots of fun things to do in the snow, but none of it's fun unless you gear up. At Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Stop in and see Corporal Thornton. He'll even show you how to write your name in the snow.
Great googly moogly.
Welcome to BOKR 1310. This is Three Men and a Microphone in conjunction with Civil War Radio, Armin Marinetti, and we are here today and we're going to talk about the Second Amendment and Armin on the Constitution of America.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Do we have to remind everybody what Civil War Radio is about, or you think they got it by now?
No, I think you should always remind them, because there'll be that guy who thinks, they're pro-slavery. I guarantee you there's somebody out there thinking that. So,
All right. Civil War Radio, okay? The word civil means that we're going to act civilized. We're going to act like people that are mature and polite. Who wants to do the war part? Go ahead, Tim. Tim's got a...
War is when we disagree, when we don't have the same viewpoint, and we become, at least in our views, verbally combative.
Okay, yeah. So we can disagree, get along, get things figured out, right?
And then there's the civil part.
I did the civil part. Mike, you want to jump in and...
Yeah. Tim's not paying attention.
No,
he's
not.
I don't think he's
not
just got a cup of coffee.
Coffee's just kicking in. So we're going to talk today about the Second Amendment of our United States Constitution. We've been trying to go in order. So far, so good. Last week, we talked about the First Amendment. Now, the Second Amendment is one where there's a lot of popular confusion, and I dare to say it's by design. It's a short amendment. I'm going to read it because that's, again, to me, that's the best way to get the right words. I have heard in the past that some people have read the Second Amendment, but they've left out some things or they've altered some things. So if you have your handy-dandy pocket Constitution, I've got more coming. I got a hold of my contact. I got more constitutions coming, Tim.
I had it, and now I need it, and it's not here.
All right, you'll have to share.
That sounds exactly like everybody.
So this Second Amendment, let me read it. It starts off with a well-regulated militia. Okay, so militia, back in the day when this was written, meant that anybody of a adult age that could handle a firearm, such as a musket, you could be mustered to protect your community. So that could be a young man or woman in their early teens that was properly trained by an adult, mostly a parent, to handle a firearm, because they were, many of them felt that this nation wasn't, this land, because it wasn't a nation yet, was an occupied land, and it was occupied by the British. So that's what they, the original definition of a militia is. We, if
well
we had,
trained.
I'm getting to that part, that's coming.
Okay, go ahead, I want to make sure, I really do want to understand this part, because this is, right down to the punctuation, this is what's the big controversy between how we believe the Second Amendment reads and how others.
Yes, yes. So, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. State is capitalized, so it's not a state of being. It's a geographical government-regulated territory. The right of the people to keep and bear arms. Arms is capitalized, shall not be infringed. Okay, everybody know what that word infringe means? Anybody want to take a shot at that?
If it's infringed, fringed would, to me, the word fringed is the very outer edges. So not to be infringed and the very most outer edge of something.
Yeah.
At all.
Violated, basically.
Not just, you know, overwhelmed, but not even touching the fringe.
Yeah. After I get through this introductory part, we're going to talk about a couple of current or recent Supreme Court cases that took what's known as an originalist view. That term means that the Supreme Court justices try to use the letter of the Constitution and what was the intent of the people that wrote these words based on their life, not fast forward to today. So a lot of those justices that have an originalist point of view don't take this living, breathing document approach that is very common today, especially in the schools. I want to make a small commercial for something I heard just yesterday on the radio. There, in our schools today, CNN and another news network called, I forgot what it was called now, Education One or Communication One. These two news networks are designed for junior high and high school students. And they usually take 10 minutes out of their day to see what's the highlights of these news. And they can be very left-leaning, all about global warming, all about taking our Second Amendment rights away, think all about illegal immigration. So I heard on the radio yesterday that there's a new news organization, and I'm going to forget it, Lumen. It's called Lumen, L-U-M-E-N. studentnews.com, and they're taking the opposite approach, a conservative approach to what's going on in this country and the world, and they're putting together 10-minute clips. Now, what really caught my attention and I liked is that they're for-profit. They're actually a for-profit organization, kind of like we were brought up,
right?
You know, where for-profit is not a swear word. It means that you do business and you have something left over so you can keep your doors open.
That's right. And you have money back to give back to the community by your choice of charity.
Exactly. So, okay, that was the end of commercial interruption. We'll go back to the Second Amendment so far. Any questions? Am I...
No, you're doing fine.
I'm doing okay? All right. So now, in this book that I like to use, it says what it says and what it means. Now, here's a little bit of a modern approach to the Second Amendment and how it's being interpreted by many federal courts throughout our country. So the first note I made here, it says here that the principal debate surrounding the Second Amendment concerns whether the right to use and buy guns belongs to individuals or only to a militia, kind of what Tim referred to earlier. Although the courts generally have held that the right applies to individuals, like all of us in this room, they have permitted the government to limit some rights of gun manufacturers, owners, and sellers. So that's why we have permit laws, because the Supreme Court has allowed some limitation. So we can't just drive around in tanks and armored vehicles and carry bazookas on our hip. Okay? Right. Even though we got one here back there someplace.
Gotta have a bazooka. Please describe everything I own as inert.
Inert. Inert. I know what that means.
That saves me from being at least beat up on the way.
Yeah, it's not active. It's not alive. It's not usable.
It can never be active.
Okay. It's been...
It's
neutered. Bad choice of words. I'm sorry. It's early, guys. Forgive me.
I just hope you have bail money.
I'll read this last sentence, and then I'm going to go into some court cases and answer any questions that you guys might have. So today, questions about the Second Amendment center around bans on assault weapons. All right, I'm going to commentary here. I've never seen a weapon get up and attack someone. So, again, this is a misuse of the English language. There is no such thing as an assault weapon. People do assaults with a weapon. So, if you're not assaulting somebody with your rifle, I prefer to call it a tool of self-defense. I think that's more accurate than an assault weapon. Okay, so enough of my commentary. So... bans on assault weapons, comma, mandatory background checks, which I think is a great idea. I think we should have some background checks. Waiting periods and other restrictions on gun sales or use. So that, in a nutshell, is the Second Amendment. And it causes all kinds of controversy, especially with family members from New York City around the holidays. So, 'cause, you know, nobody should own a gun. There's no reason to have a gun. We gonna use it? Even my own dad, who's a Korean War veteran,
doesn't see the necessity.
No, we've had discussions over it as well. He says the only reason a person owns a gun is to use it, and I said that's correct for target practice, for hunting,
for home,
for self defense.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't go out shooting it in the air at the full moon we had this past week on Wednesday the 31st. That moon was beautiful. Did you guys get a chance to see that?
I only saw pictures. I wasn't up at 4:30 in the morning when it was supposed to be at its peak.
Well, driving here this morning, it was right in front of me, and it wasn't full anymore.
Right.
You know, it's going towards the other side, but it still was, it was beautiful.
Nice.
So, want to talk about a couple?
Yeah, let's talk about the court cases.
No, before we go there, we didn't address the punctuation that everybody gets confused with the Second Amendment. Read the part about the weapons, or all the militia.
At the very beginning, from the actual Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia, which when they say regulated, you mentioned it earlier, they mean trained.
Trained.
That was the proper use of the word regulated back when this was written.
Right.
Today, we call regulation more, as I told you, I heard President Trump say, we all know that regulation is nothing but stealth taxation. And I was impressed to hear that, but it's not – when we hear regulation, we think of rules and laws.
Right.
But in this use, a well-regulated militia means trained, as Tim said earlier.
Right.
Being necessary to the security of a free state. Well, that's us. We're the free state. And they were worried that there'd be an empire like England or France back then that would try to put the new nation back under their thumb. So they needed to protect themselves. And we didn't have money for an army like we have today. So people in the countryside, that was a militia.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Talking about, like, safe havens. Would that be a capitalized S?
Safe havens. Like, give me an example.
Hi, I'm from Mexico. I'm going to live in a safe haven.
I'm
I came here illegally.
So, like a sanctuary city, I think, is what she's referring
like sanctuary city.
Would that be a capital S? I think if they use it as part of, say, for example, Sanctuary City, Chicago, if they use that as part of the description of that noun, Chicago, probably yes. Yeah, but if they're just talking in general about sanctuary cities, I don't think they'd have to capitalize the S and the C on that. So this is, you know, what we call today Old English, but it was traditional English to them.
Right.
The people who wrote
it. There was no other English.
That's right. This was it. And I made a mistake a couple of weeks back of saying speaking American, and you pointed out there is no American. You're right. So, well, Tim is being interrupted. He's the reason. He asked the question, and then he walks away. So we have to.
Okay, so let's move on to the court cases then.
Okay, let's do that. And then we'll come back to Tim's question. You missed your chance, Tim. Sorry.
I know.
Yeah. So back in 2008, the Supreme Court decided in a case that was called District of Columbia against Heller that the city of Washington, D.C., could not require people that own firearms, not just pistols. I think that the pistols might have even been outlawed at one time in the city of Washington, D.C. But the people that own firearms, they had a local city ordinance that said that the firearm had to be disassembled and you had to have a lock, a trigger lock on it.
When was this?
This was back in 2008.
Oh.
So the Supreme Court took on the case because Mr. Heller, from what I read, Mr. Heller was a Capital City police officer, Capitol Building police officer. And part of his job was to wear a firearm at work. But because he lived in the District of Columbia, he couldn't take that firearm home and use it to protect himself in his home. So, and if he did have permission to have a firearm, such as a rifle, it had to be disassembled with a trigger lock. So, the 5-4 decision stated that the District of Columbia was violating Mr. Heller's Second Amendment rights because that gun in the house was not usable for him to defend himself. So the two things that seem to show up over and over again in these recent court decisions is that the owner has to be able to defend, so a right to self-defense. And the other thing is that the I'm losing my thought here now. You can't ban a firearm. So those two things, you can't ban a firearm, and we have a right to self-defense, keep showing up in these court case decisions. The next one was in 2010. That was also a 5-4 decision from the Supreme Court. That case was called McDonald versus the City of Chicago. In general, what that did is it took the Heller decision from 2008 and applied it to states and local governments such as cities as well. So from what I understand, McDonald lived in a dangerous area of the city of Chicago, and he had a pistol to protect himself and his family. And according to local ordinances, that was illegal. I don't even think the pistol was registered. I don't even think you could have a pistol in the city of Chicago at that time. So he took it to court. It worked its way up to the Supreme Court. And the terms that showed up a lot in my research was due process and the 14th Amendment. We're going to get to the 14th Amendment, but in general, the 14th Amendment took a lot of the U.S. Constitution individual protections that we see in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, and extended it to state law as well. So in general, they said that the Second Amendment also applies to state and local governments as well. So Mr. McDonald won the court case, and he's able to protect himself and his family by having a firearm in his home.
Even though it's unregistered.
I don't know about that, because they can change those laws. I'm sure there was probably some local laws developed from these Supreme Court cases, which often happens when there's a decision.
The states up north, you can have a pistol in your house and for self-protection. And then when you leave your house, I think, with the pistol, that's when you need a pistol permit. And I always have a problem with the whole term concealed carry, because some states, they want you to open carry, so yep. They know you have a pistol.
Such as Texas.
And yep. Like here in New York, they want you to hide everything. So no one knows you have a pistol. I personally don't see the point in that, but I think it should just be on your own discretion. I think. I don't know. But either way, but the basic law is that you're allowed to have that home protection. I mean, it shouldn't matter if it's a pistol, a rifle, whatever it takes to protect your domain while you're sleeping at night and rest. Definitely, you should be able to protect that, and no one should say whether you need a license or not, at least at the home. Going out after the home, whatever. I would prefer that it wasn't. There's some states where, you just need a driver's license.
Again, going back to what I took out of my research to simplify it so I can remember, because there are so many local laws that will maneuver around the Second Amendment the best they can, like our SAFE Act, which when Scope gets here, we'll be able to talk about that more.
Scope just called, and it's snowing so bad out
their way.
Their way that they can't make it in.
Okay.
It's already like to the squall point.
Okay, so
let's talk then about the SAFE Act.
All right.
Okay, so Governor Cuomo passed in the dead of night these rules restricting the use of weapons for self-defense, right?
Yep.
And so what's the blowback from that, and what impact is that having on the average Joe in the state of New York?
All right, so I am not an expert, like we discussed earlier, on the SAFE Act.
Right.
So I tried to do some research to brush up and find a summary, and at one point I know there were some lawsuits claiming that the SAFE Act, which came around in 2013, was unconstitutional, violating some of these decisions like the Heller decision from 2008, the McDonald decision from 2010. But I found a lot of gaps, okay? In other words, the information I found was dating back to 2014. So that's 4 years ago. In this day and age, that's not real recent, 4 years, because things move so fast. So
Well, except court cases. Court cases don't seem to move so fast.
yep. So some of this is from memory.
Okay.
All right, and then that's always dangerous.
Especially when you get to be our age.
Yes. I do remember that there was a big problem over 10 capacity of 10 bullet magazines. Because the first SAFE Act said that you could only have 7 rounds in a magazine.
Right.
And I guess a federal judge out towards Buffalo Way agreed with that argument and said that you know, you can't, there's all these magazines that hold 10 rounds. You can't tell a person to only put 7 in there and make that, it's too hard to police. It's silly. So the compromise was that you can own a 10-round magazine. You could only keep 7 bullets in your magazine when it's at home or being transported. Now, when you get to the shooting range, a licensed shooting range like we have down the street here,
right?
Canandaigua Sportsman's Club.
Yep.
And you met Nick last night. He right. might come out and be a guest someday. Then you can put 10 rounds in the 10-round magazine for target practice, but it's got to be on that property.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was a little bit of compromise there. So I don't know all the specifics of the SAFE Act.
Okay.
This is what I do know, that at one time there were lawsuits saying that the SAFE Act violated our Second Amendment rights. And remember, looking at those two court cases, if it's an out-and-out ban and you can't defend yourself, those are two important criteria that the Supreme Court uses to determine. Our SAFE Act has never gone that high. Once the federal judges in the districts around New York State made decisions, it seemed to have stopped. And that's why I was hoping the guys from Scope would be here, because maybe they can enlighten us.
Well, I'm sure they've been appealed to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court only does a certain number of cases every year.
Yes.
And there's usually cases that the judges think that they can make some real impact on.
Yes.
So I don't know whether it's New York SAFE Act that is that not that appealing to the Supreme Court judges. Maybe there's other firearm laws that be enacted elsewhere that they would prefer to rule on.
In the one sentence that I read in the research, and I hate to admit this, but I did use Wikipedia because that came up as a source, and I would always caution students, too, that if you use Wikipedia, at the bottom of the page, they list all the sources with footnotes.
Right.
You want to go to those sources and make sure they're legitimate. Because Wikipedia might be okay if it's the information's coming from a legitimate source. But as a reminder, it's been filtered down again before you get to see it on the Wikipedia page. And what the last sentence said in this paragraph was that because of Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia's death, that the action here to take the SAFE Act up to the Supreme Court stalled because they felt they didn't have a majority to win. The validity of that statement, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you what I read.
Well, that kind of makes sense to me.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I mean, now we have Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court,
yep.
And I suspect they're probably trying to move the cases forward now. So,
yep.
But what's really interesting is, like you were saying, the Heller decision, that was a 5-4 decision.
Yep.
You have real close
yep.
votes here.
Yep.
So the Supreme Court is clearly divided
yes.
On these decisions, you yep. know. But one of the most interesting things about the Heller decision was the argument was that the right to defense was a right of the military and not the individual, right? When they were talking about yeah. militia, they were saying, well, you got to be a member of the Army, and you've got to be trained in order to have this right to defense. And the Supreme Court said, no, this is an individual right. This is a person's right. They have a right to defense,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So you don't have to be a member of the Army to be able to own a gun and defend yourself.
But New York State, by forming a National Guard,
right?
Or I take that back, not National Guard, the New York State Militia, they've taken away your right because we provide it for you.
And what you're saying
and that, I would love to have the guys here to explain that, because that's New York State's defense. Because we do, you know, people at home understand, we have a National Guard, right?
Right. I see what
you're
saying.
We have an Army Reserve, mm-hmm. and we have, of course, an active duty Army.
Right.
But there's also a New York State Militia, which are good guys and women who are there to support New York State and our reserves and National Guard when things go wrong. You know, the flood up near New York. And 9/11, of course. But there's a lot of things that they've gotten involved in just recently. Every time there's bad weather, they're usually actually calling out the state militia. But the only thing about that detracts from that is I believe New York State uses that against us.
I see what you're saying.
And there's also something in there, too, where New York State is the only state that didn't, at the time, agree to the Second Amendment. There's, that would be worth looking into.
It doesn't matter if they did or not. The guy that represented New York State signed the...
he did? There was someone there?
It was ratified.
Right.
So, I mean, it has to be... Boy, you guys are talking... Let me see if I can sort some things out here. First of all, I understand what you're saying about the militia.
Yeah.
Should I wait?
Nope.
Hello?
Nope. Keep going.
Well, maybe we should get another opinion. Well, all right? You're perfect timing.
I thought it was the lady from On Golden Pond out there. It's a cute little old lady.
Well, let's go back to what you were saying about the dissenting parties, about the militia.
Okay.
And the 5-4 decision. Some of the four that were against the Heller decision stated something similar to what you just stated about the militia being a military organization, like Tim mentioned in New York. That didn't go over very well, but it goes back to this living, breathing document.
Right.
So imagine if any contract you had for business or even the mortgage for your home was a living, breathing document. And it could be changed at any time. And, you know, maybe you didn't. Maybe you agreed to the change, maybe you didn't, right?
Right.
So I don't feel real comfortable with a contract being living, breathing, because the U.S. Constitution, in our view, is rule book that the federal government, and now the states because of incorporation through the 14th Amendment, has to follow. So what good is this if you can change it at any time? Why even bother wasting the ink? Might as well throw it away.
Right. Kind of makes you like the Patriots. Is that right?
Take a break.
Well, we got it.
Yeah. Let's take a
break. Call it a proxy then, because a proxy you can change.
Ah. Or proposal or something like that. All right. We're done?
So, well, we have a guest who walked into the studio, blew in with the wind and the snow, and that's our next... We don't say candidate, do we? What do we say?
Well, she is. She's a candidate
for
the position of Ontario County Judge.
And it's Miss Kitty Carley.
Right. Welcome, Kitty.
Nice to meet
you. Know, I got to say, you're so humble walking up to the door in this bad weather, and we had it locked so you couldn't even get in. And I always think you're going to show up with, like, a little bit of an entourage, some bodyguards, like your husband, you know, the big guy. And you just come walking up. I don't expect to see you just knocking on the door.
Let me in.
They don't need a bodyguard. I mean, that's what we're here for, right?
That's right. I'd say you're pretty well protected in here. We won't let anything happen. So, Kitty, before you jump in about the candidacy, we're right at the very end of talking about the Second Amendment. That's our show for this week. This is Armin Marinetti, Kitty Carley. Armin is quite the
scholar when it comes
scholar to the
Constitution.
He's actually advised Senator Pam Helming.
Oh, wow.
So that puts a little light. I know Armin's going, shut up, Tim.
He could read my mind.
Do you have an opinion, Kitty, on the way the Second Amendment is worded, especially the part with
the militia
and being trained? Can you quote it real quick?
I'll paraphrase it instead of quote it.
You got to get up to the mic.
All right. To paraphrase it, in the Second Amendment, it says that we have the right to bear arms and keep a regulated militia. And a lot of people today have interpreted that to mean that it has to be a sanctioned organization from a state government or federal government, where when it was written, the militia was people that were able to defend themselves in case there was an invasion from a foreign country such as England or France. So it could have been a man, woman, young boy, young woman that was able to use a rifle and able to muster if need be. Muster meaning to gather to form a regulated, which meant trained. It didn't mean regulation like we use today, back when it was written.
Regulated, it could mean organized.
Organized, trained. They had something, a way to defend themselves in a manner that was, I almost used professional, but they weren't paid, that was effective.
So what do you think?
Well, I am running a different race than the last time, and now I've got some real rules.
I can only
speak of my qualifications and what prepares me for the role of Ontario County Judge.
I'm sorry. You're right. Really? We've had other judges
on. Turn off the mics.
We've had other judges on before, and you're right. I forgot about that. You know who we had on before? Judge Schiano. So he talked about his running for judge, and of course, he couldn't really comment on politics. So what he could do, and we staged it, we had a chili cook-off. And he looked at me and goes, do you know that I do this professionally anyways, outside of everything else? So he judged our chili cook-off.
Oh, I love it.
But it was for camping food. And it was all the...
MREs?
No, it wasn't MREs. It was the dehydrated ones, like... I don't even know the name. Our name is Camping Meals, and then there's two other companies. So we heated them up and stirred them up, and our one guy, our vendor, won twice. And he was hard on it. Yeah, he was the consistency, this, that, the flavor. So, no, we have no sandbagging for you.
Well, where's the chili?
Where's the chili? We can at least have you judge coffee. Do you want some coffee?
I would love some coffee.
Want me to get it?
Yeah. This is actually from up the road at... What's that place in Farmington?
Finger Lakes Coffee Roasters.
Ooh, yum. Did you make me crazy?
Making me crazy. I think that's my favorite.
I know, but it's a different name, and I should know the name, but I got it from the Woody's Cafe.
Okay.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
Now, are we started yet?
We're moving from the Civil War segment into your interview segment.
Okay.
Okay.
Awesome.
So, welcome.
Hi. It's great to see everyone.
Great to see you again. Now, I got to ask you, you're apparently running for Ontario County Judge because the former judge hit a wall. He reached 70 years of age. Is that right? Or is going to reach 70
years
of age?
He's not a former judge yet. Judge Coker's still on the bench, but he's reaching the mandatory age of retirement. So this is his last year. He'll be done on December 31st, 2018. Okay. So there'll be an open spot, and that's what I'm running for. Thank you.
Right.
So
sometimes when one door closes, another door opens,
yes.
Right? So
yes.
Isn't that interesting? But are you allowed to say how you feel about this mandatory retirement age?
Well, for me, it's good because it gives me the opportunity to run.
Well, and it also gives you a few years, right, that you may be. But you have to run every 4 years or every 2 years, or is it once you've got that position, are you in for until you're 70?
The county court judge position is for a 10-year term.
10-year term. So every 10 years you have to run.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's different. The DA positions every 4 years.
Right.
County court judges 10 years. And Supreme Court positions are 14.
Are 14. Okay. And can you speak to how you feel about mandatory retirement? I know you said it created an opening for you. But how do you feel about having to retire at 70?
If I get the position, I think retiring at 70 will be a good thing.
Okay.
you'd want to do something better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to speak to the fundamentals and the policies of it, just because running this race, I'm allowed to speak about my qualifications and what prepares me for the role.
Okay. Are you allowed to educate the public in terms of what the role of the Ontario County Judge is, what types of cases you hear, things like that?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that'll be my next question.
That's a great question. I can answer that one.
Okay.
The county court judge hears a lot of criminal cases. That's a bulk of the docket is criminal cases, criminal felony cases. And also, Ontario County judges preside over family court, which is different than other counties. And so it's primarily criminal cases and family court cases.
Okay, so family court cases are generally when you have divorces and assets are being split up, that kind of thing?
Well, matrimonial cases are heard by Supreme Court.
Okay, so that's a different court.
So that's different. So family court involves custody.
Custody, okay.
Visitation, residency, child support, things like that.
Okay.
And orders of protection, family offenses, that type of thing.
Okay, so I don't know if you could speak to this, but let's find out. Rehab or punishment? Which way do you lean?
Those are the things that I can't speak about.
Okay.
I can speak again about my qualifications, and I'll tell you about them. I've been a lawyer for 20 years, and the last 20 years have put me on the path that has essentially prepared me for this role. I was a prosecutor for 13 years, and during that time, I handled thousands and thousands of criminal cases, most of which were felonies and violent felonies. And so I have trial court experience, and I think the best judges are those that have that trial court experience. I know the law. I know criminal procedure, and that helps me and prepares me to be on the other side of the bench. Now, for the last 7 years, I've had my own practice, focused primarily on family court, and I've handled matrimonial cases and criminal cases. So not only do I have the prosecutor experience, but then I have the defense attorney experience. And as a judge, you have to balance every day, being objective, weighing the evidence, being fair. And so the time on the other side of being a prosecutor has honed my judgment, honed my skills, and prepared me for this role. And, you know, some people said, oh, you know, you're going to have to handle family court cases. I can't wait for that if given the opportunity. I've handled hundreds and hundreds of family court cases in my practice, and they're complex cases because families are complex,
right?
And there's complex issues. And my experience as a domestic violence prosecutor also prepares me for handling the issues that can come before a family court judge, in the capacity of Ontario County Court
right.
judge. And those are really essential credentials, I believe, that the judge needs. And you know, because Super Bowl is coming up, I'm going to try a sports analogy. But you know, when we have someone on this commentating about football, who do we have? People that were pros on the field,
right?
People that know the plays and the ins and outs. I believe the best judges are someone that has been on the field in the courtroom. I have handled over 80 felony jury trials. So how does that prepare me for the role? Well, I know the rules for picking a jury. I know the rules for drafting and having a search warrant that's sufficient and will hold up. I've presented thousands of cases to the grand jury. That will help me, if I'm elected as county court judge, to review the sufficiency of cases presented to the grand jury. And when you know the rules, because you've done them and you've practiced them, I believe that prepares someone for being judge.
Okay. That's great.
I gotta say, you have the best analogies. I love you. We've
ties it so well being
well,
Super
I love
Bowl
the
weekend,
football
right?
analogy. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, who
yeah.
do you want? Someone, you know, telling us. I mean,
you want an experienced player.
You want an experienced player, and you don't want to be up there. Oh, how many challenges for you know on this jury case? You know what I mean? Like how many. Peremptory challenges on a divine. Oh, I got to go back and look it up. No, those are decisions I can make. I would be able to make from the bench. I love the law. I love rules of evidence. I have been trained by one of the best defense attorneys, I believe, God rest his soul, in just the understanding and the foundations that have to be laid to get evidence in a trial. And when you have to make those decisions, if you've done it for 20 years, I believe I'm prepared to do that.
Wow, that's great.
Now, judges, as I understand it, sometimes have to get up in the middle of the night to sign mm-hmm. warrants and whatnot.
My phone will be on.
You ready to give up your sleep?
Yes. Well, if they're willing to drive out to Honeyoy, then come on out, and I'll, you know, right now, well, When I was a prosecutor, I got calls all the time. You'd be on call in the middle of the night, and I'd have to go oftentimes to the judge's house in the middle of the night. Now that I'm in private practice, I can tell you that my clients call me at all times of the day. So I'm prepared to wake up in the middle of the night with my brain working and to do what needs to be done.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to ask you this, but just out of my not knowing anything, can a judge practice law when he's not judging?
Not for this position. When you have local court judges, whether it be in, you know, Richmond or Naples, Bloomfield, those are part-time positions and allow you to practice law. This position does not, because it's full-time. And it, you know, I think the it, you just don't have the time, and it's not permitted.
Good.
So you would actually have to give up your private practice to take on this position?
Yes.
Wow, that's quite a sacrifice, isn't it?
It's not a sacrifice to me to serve this county that I love so much.
Yeah.
And I'm committed to service, and I'm prepared to serve, and I have a passion for justice. And, you know, I use Lady Justice as an analogy, and for a while now.
Yeah,
but that's because
right.
I draw inspiration from her every day and what she represents. So if I was blessed enough to be elected the next county court judge, it would be an honor. I would miss my clients. I would miss my practice. But to serve, to me, there's no comparison. So I want, if someone wants to know what kind of judge I'm going to be and they're listening, look to Lady Justice. Look on top of the courthouse. She is blindfolded because she must, you know, you must be objective and have no bias and no prejudice. I promise the voters that I will do that. The scales are balanced because when you have a case before you, one side can never have a leg up. It's even. And I must make decisions with respect to evidence coming in and balance what is going to come in and what is fair. I can do that. I've done that for 20 years. I can continue to be fair and balanced. And she wields the sword, which represents strength and the authority of the law. I have that as well. When you're the judge, you've got to know there's going to be some cases that deserve the severest of punishments. And there's going to be other cases that might not. And a judge must have the ability to administer justice in a fair, impartial way. But when there needs to be severe and strong, I have that. I have that experience to know which case is which. And she also has the scrolls, which is knowledge of the law. And knowledge of the law that you're going to be, the cases you're going to be handling, I have that. And it's so important to have the trial experience, to know the law, to know the procedure. And for 20 years, I've been on this side of the bench, and it has prepared me to be on the bench.
Okay. Now, speaking of bench, that particular courthouse, the Ontario County Courthouse, is a little famous in history, right?
It sure is.
Because Susan B. Anthony was dragged down here, and there was a case where, well, can you tell us a little bit about that case? Because I suspect you know more about it than I do.
Well, this past summer, my sister and I were part of the Women's March to the courthouse, and it was a phenomenal experience. I happen to love to dress up in Halloween and the like, and so we dressed up in our Susan B. Anthony wear, and we marched with other women to the courthouse. And it was just so awesome and empowering, and to be at the courthouse, and they had the actors, and Susan B. Anthony was there, and Frederick Douglass, and it was to hear, you kind of for a minute felt that it was almost real, and I know that's it's probably silly to hear, but to hear her speak and to talk about the trial and the courthouse that she was tried in the background, it was, for me and my sister, Kathy, just an overwhelming experience, and to be surrounded by other women, and because of her...
Well, not just other women. To be fair, there were a lot of men at
there. There were, when we were in the Women's March, it was
right,
just women.
Right. So.
But there was a lot of men there. Absolutely. Right. And I don't ever mean to suggest differently. But Susan B. Anthony and others paved the way for women to vote and right. for me to be able to run for this position. And if I could practice in the courthouse that she was tried in, that has just amazing symbolism. And I would be honored to be the first woman Ontario County Court judge in the courthouse that Susan B. Anthony was tried in.
So we've never had a woman Ontario County Court judge?
Never.
Wow. Well, that's kind of actually surprising.
Look how far we've come from Susan B. Anthony right. having the first female Ontario County judge.
Exactly.
That's nice.
And I say this, you know, when people ask me about that, I'm not asking for people to think that I'm qualified simply because I'm a woman. I want the candidate who has the most qualifications should win. But it would be very symbolic and an honor to be that first woman.
No, I agree. I don't think we should be voting for somebody into office just because of the sex.
Absolutely
right?
not.
We want the most qualified person in that office.
Absolutely.
Right? We want the person who's going to be the most just to be sitting in that judge's seat.
Absolutely.
So,
and yeah. for any position.
Right. That's
it's
true
the most
of any
qualified.
Position. Absolutely. Most qualified, not the sex.
Mike, or Armin has a question.
Can you give us a little bit of information about the process as far as the election goes? When's the date? Is there an opponent? That type of stuff so people can be prepared?
Absolutely. Right now, I have announced that I am running. I believe there's another gentleman who has announced that he's running. I think those are the two official candidates as of now. But, you know, it's a long time to November 6th, which will be this year's election, general election date. So whether there will be a primary or not, that's yet to be determined.
Okay.
But I am a lifelong Republican, and I hope to gain the endorsement of the Republican Party.
Okay. So we have currently two people who have announced who are both Republican.
Yes.
Okay. So there's a potential of a primary.
There's a potential.
Do we know if there's any candidates from the Democratic Party who are planning on running?
Nobody has officially announced.
Okay, so no official candidate at this point.
No official candidate.
Okay, that's good to clarify that. So,
but you know, it's
right.
It's early.
It's early, and it's good that you're out there early, right?
I'm so glad to have this time, and I have made so many connections in Ontario County, and so it's been really to get out and in front of it, and to get my message out early. I think is going to be very helpful.
Nice. That's very good. It's a very good platform.
Right. And really, we want to wish you the best of luck in your candidacy.
Well, thank you so much.
We hope it goes very well for you.
I just would remind everyone that I'm committed to service. I'm committed to Ontario County.
Clerico, can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Maduro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Can you hear me? How long I've been on? Welcome! Enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs, I, Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge, fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hickory Motto Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out.
Introducing now, in the corner of Case's Mini Storage Plaza, wearing camouflage boxers and smoking a cigar, hailing from Canandaigua, New York, Corporal Tim Thornton's the all-new The Military Exchange. The Military Exchange is proud to present over 5,000 feet of pure 100% military. The Military Exchange is your source for all your military needs and proudly supports active reserve and former military, VFWs, legions, and leagues, Boy Scouts, Sea Cadets, Civil Air Patrol, and your family. Presenting cigars fresh from our plantation in the Dominica, collectibles, t-shirts, hoodies, and ball caps, rank and insignia, uniforms for parade, security, and law enforcement, camouflage clothing, outerwear, wool pants, parkas, and field jackets, camping backpacks, tents, and sleep systems, vintage clothing and gear, Class A's past and present, tactical and survival gear, antiques and airsoft, brand new and pre-enjoyed military camouflage and boots. Check out our military talk show at IronMikesMX.com. 5,000 feet to pure 100% military in Canandaigua, New York. Old Glory, Stars and Stripes, Red, White, and Blue, the A flag, the American flag, the flag that has flown above every rooftop to guide on, battleships, camps, forts, and FOPs. The American flag bears the crimson color of blood that has kept our flag as pure as the white bars that flank the blue field of honor. The Military Exchange is proud to present Valley Forge American-made flags. 100% American-made, real issue. We sell flags by the military branch, unit, or division. Army, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard, National Guard, Marine Corps. We sell flag poles, mounts, and display cases. Show your pride. Display your branch proudly with a flag from Valley Forge. The Gadsden, Don't Tread on Me flag and decals. Perfect for the conservative New Yorker. Join the military culture that is the Military Exchange. Located in Canandaigua, New York. Check out our weekly video broadcast of our radio show at IronMikesMX.com. Hello, I'm Corporal Tim Thorpe, the owner of the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Over the past 20 years, I have personally searched out vintage clothing, uniforms, antiques. I like to collect all things military. I am just now willing to let go parts of my collection. We have a line of hand-picked vintage collectibles. World War I to present day. Vintage is a great way to give yourself a unique look. Ladies and gentlemen, add a little vintage to your wardrobe. What I like about vintage is the quality of material. Cotton, wool, leather, all at its very best. Different texture, design, and old school patterns that fit the way they should fit on a man or a woman. The Military Exchange is your home for vintage clothing and collectibles. For your viewing pleasure, please go to my website, IronMikesMX.com, and see our video and pictures of vintage collectibles.
We both had a one-way on the highway, both of us, trying to run us off the road.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
That's scary.
You were involved Mike, was in that, too? Mike, was
I was actually in front of him. I didn't realize that I was in front of him, but there was a car that I watched it. It was approaching the hill where the Victor exit is, yeah. And you know, over that hill, there's usually either a cop up, you know, where the old thruway exit, where the rest stop was, or there's a cop down at the bottom of the hill.
Okay.
So this car's headed up this hill, and all of a sudden, from the middle lane, he makes a left turn, and he starts coming in the opposite direction in the fast lane. And I'm in the middle lane, quite a ways behind him.
But
I see him pull this maneuver. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And so it comes flying down, and I'm all the way over to the right now, and I'm laying on my horn. Car keeps going. Doesn't bother to stop or brake or anything, and when I got up over the hill, I spotted a police car down at the bottom of the hill,
yeah.
And I don't know if this car was trying to avoid that or whatever, but I swung in there, and I told the cop, there's a car going the wrong way on 490.
Didn't call me or anything
moly.
And say, Tim, he's headed your way. Look out.
I didn't know you were back there.
Yeah, that would have been a bad thing. I would have looked down to the phone because it rang, and then...
Right, and next thing you know, you're hitting them.
I saw that guy, and he's hugging the cement wall, you know, left of the fast lane. I guess, yeah. He's on my left now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I saw these cars playing leapfrog, jumping out of the way. And luckily, the semi to my right, we were side by side. And I had to get out of my lane because he's hugging the wall, but he's still in my lane. So the semi, he obviously knew and could see everything. So he had backed off on his speed. And at the last second, I was able to jump in front of him. But I have to look at this guy. Look at Molly and Shotzi, who, of course, Molly's got her head up front, looking out the window, practically, you know, the front window. And the semi him and jump, and the guy went by. Mm. And we both agreed it was the same car.
Right, it was a white sedan.
To the East Avenue, Eastview Mall? Is that what he was trying to do?
No.
We don't know what.
Mike saw him do a U-turn on 490 East. So I thought he came up through the mall exit, but no, he just decided from the middle lane to turn around.
Wow.
So he's either insane or he's running from the law.
Right.
And you would think that you would hear something about it later on, and you never
did. Not a word. I couldn't find a thing, and I definitely called 911, and they acted like I was the only one they called. Yeah. And I'm like, somebody should be called. Of course, they go, well, where are you? I go, I can't find a mile marker. What road are you on? I'm on 390 East. Are you sure?
490.
I go, no, I'm on 490 East. I'm not shook up, but I never take that way to work.
Yeah.
And that day, the dog actually was kind of in the way, and I missed my exit to go to the thruway, so here I am headed for a head-on collision. This has been a Combat Radio production of Three Men and a Microphone. Check us out every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. on WOKR 1310, and our encore performance every Sunday afternoon, 2 to 4 p.m. And I'd like to thank all of my co-hosts, Armin Marinetti, Civil War Radio, Melissa Walker, our videographer, and from Canandaigua, Facebook 2020, Mike Yarker. And I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, and thank you for listening to our show, and we'll see you on the flip side, and be good.